You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Journalist Helen Pitt was just a small child when the Sydney Opera House officially opened. But from her ferry on the harbour, she remembers the moment well. The year was 1973 when Queen Elizabeth cut the red ribbon in front of a cheering Sydney crowd. In that moment, a young Helen probably never dreamed that many years later she would be pulled deep into the controversial history of the country's most famous building. This year, Danish architect Jørn Utzon would have turned 100. His most famous work, the Sydney Opera House, is globally renowned. But hiding in the walls of the Opera House is a tragic story. And as Helen Pitt writes in her new book, The House, it's a story that to this day hasn't been fully resolved. From the migrant workers who helped lift the house's grand white sails to the dramatic resignation of the leading architect and designer, the Sydney Opera House has been through more than its 45 years may show. Its story starts in Sydney at the end of World War II. As a city without many cultural institutions, the arrival of English composer Sir Eugene Goossens in 1946 as guest conductor of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra was the beginning of change. Then director of the ABC, Charles Moses, saw an opportunity to start something big. And truly, the reality became bigger than anything he could have imagined at the time.
The conception of the Opera House in the beginning, when they first put down the designs, where did the desire to bring one up, where did it come about in Sydney?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, this Sydney Symphony Orchestra conductor, Eugene Goossens, came to Australia. Charles Moses, who was head of the ABC, invited him out as a guest conductor in 1946, and then in 1947 they lured him back on a salary that was twice the amount that the Prime Minister of the time was earning. Now, when he arrived at the airport, he vowed in the year that Don Bradman made his 100th century, he vowed that he would make the symphony orchestra as famous as Australian cricketers. So he really took it upon himself to try and find a home for the symphony orchestra. Finally, Charles Moses organised a meeting with Joe Carl, who was the ALP Premier at the time. And in 1954, which I guess would be when a large bulk of European migrants were coming to Australia, he vowed that he would do something about it.
When Goossens arrived, the orchestra was performing in the Sydney Town Hall, but the location wasn't acceptable for neither the musicians nor the public. European migrants were putting pressure on the government to build an institution reminiscent of the buildings they had back home. In 1954, Moses finally decided to act. And 2 years later, Premier Carl released an international competition for a national opera house at Bennelong Point. On the 9th of April 1956, Jørn Utzon turned 38 and set to work, sending in his 12 drawings before the competition closed in December. In January 1957, he was declared the winner and the future mastermind of Sydney's newest cultural attraction. But the fame and the excitement didn't last forever. Utzon's grand vision proved to be too much for many, and when the budget got out of control, tensions arose between the architect, the engineers, and the Australian government. On February 28, 1966, after a meeting that lasted barely 15 minutes, Utzon resigned and walked off the job. In April that year, he boarded a plane with his family and left the country. In his briefcase, the incomplete set of final drawings for the house. Utzon claimed that the government would eventually recognise the Opera House could not go on without him and expected to be back in Sydney within 2 years. But Utzon was never invited back to the project, and as an artist unwilling to see his vision compromised, he never returned to Australia to see how his building had been completed by others.
There were 2 months of protracted negotiations in which the state government and various stakeholders tried to convince Utzon to stay. Also, the Danish engineer Ove Arup flew from London in an attempt to try and convince him to stay, but their relationship had got so fraught that he refused to meet him. So it ended very badly with Utzon. When Utzon left, it was in high drama and big argument with the state government in New South Wales. But when he got back to Denmark, he didn't really get much work because he was considered to have walked away from the job. So he never got a Danish government commission again in his life. So he had to do private commissions and government commissions outside of Denmark. So it was quite difficult. He never really made a lot of money.
In the years that followed, many begged Utzon to return to the project. But by this stage, the Australian government would not allow it. Having had enough of Utzon's ideas and no plan on how to proceed without him, work on the Opera House came to a screeching halt. After a prolonged break, young architect Peter Hall was appointed to take over Utzon's design. In 1973, Hall and the workers finally managed to finish the Opera House. And though Utzon wasn't present or mentioned in the ceremony, to this day, there is no official commemoration of Peter Hall's work either. Helen and the Sydney Opera House are working hard to heal the wounds of the past and give each contributing mind their share of the glory. And though the house will, to a certain extent, always be haunted by Utzon's unrealised dreams, its white shells for many families living in Australia today hold stories of hope and determination, of migrant workers who built this monument from the ground up, a community that pushed through whatever hardship was thrown their way.
When it comes to the workers that were behind the Opera House, so the people on the ground that physically brought this building to life, what's their story? What were they like?
Lovely. There's some lovely, heartwarming stories, and many Serbo Croatians of, you know, people in your audience, I'm sure, that may have taken part in it. So all told, during the Opera House's construction, which took nearly two decades, there were 10,000 workers from 90 different countries, and many of them were from ex-Yugoslavian countries. So there were a lot of migrants because it was quite easy work to start labouring when you came here, especially that base. There was no OH&S rules. You didn't really need qualifications. So a lot of people went straight to the Opera House site and got work. And apparently, you know, there are signs within the shells of the building. People have signed their name for various different countries. And then there's a lovely story of the day that they were building the precast concrete moulds to make the shells, and Jørn Utzon, the Danish designer, was on site with many European workers, and they lowered the first concrete block into place. And as they did, he teared up. He was so emotional when he saw it, and apparently all the people around him were migrant workers, and they all cried too. So there was a huge input from foreigners in building this building.
In the end, the Australian public remain the real winners. Sitting on the shores of Sydney Harbour, Goossens, Utzon, Hall and many others left behind a landmark that continues to inspire generations of future Australians from the inside out.
Social value, it's worth $4.6 billion as a social asset. Everyone the world over knows this building and comes to Sydney just to see it. So we're lucky in many regards we have it, but the families and the people that were intimately entwined with it were not so lucky, because it was a heartbreak. I guess it's a bit like the pyramids. You don't recognise all the number of slaves that would have died in making the pyramids. It's kind of the same story for the Opera House.
Want to hear more stories like this? Subscribe to our regular podcasts on iTunes.